cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Reports. Ramon, how you doing?
It's a monumental day.
Monumental.
It's the end of the world as we know it, depending on who wins the election today.
It is the end of the world. If Hillary wins, Putin's launching his nukes at all the major cities in America.
That's right.
And if President Trump comes into power, I mean, obviously the first thing he's doing is the big red button on the desk in the Oval Office.
Well,
which doesn't exist.
Well, not to him. Maybe to like rival golf courses or something.
Maybe absolutely.
All of
absolutely.
Las Vegas except for the...
Yeah, and the Mexicans and the Chinese except the people who make his tires.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that sounds...
And the Trump
stakes. Sounds about right. So the Americans are voting today. This is a bit of a pre-record on our part. So we are doing this a little bit before the elections. So you can give our guest today credit if he makes the right predictions. And hatred if he makes the wrong predictions. The Americans, of course, are voting. I think polling would have opened about now if you're listening to us live. And by all accounts, unless after we recorded this, someone has released Hillary's sex tape, she is going to win the presidential election.
I think that makes people more famous and more popular.
Well, yes.
But... Kim Kardashian.
Absolutely, absolutely. So unless something horrific, I don't know what WikiLeaks has to actually release for her to have a scandal, but...
They can release anything they want. The mainstream media won't comment on it.
They'll just pretend it doesn't exist. Yeah. They'll pretend it doesn't exist. All right, so let's not pretend like our guest doesn't exist. Our guest today, do you want to do, shall I do introductions?
No, please go ahead.
Our guest is Ashor Saropen. Have I said your surname
that's
right?
That's correct, yeah.
And you are a elections expert. You've run several elections both across the world, but you are currently an election expert for the DA.
Yes, that's correct.
And a member of the Gauteng Provincial Legislature.
Indeed.
Have I got that
You've
all
got
right?
All down, perfect.
So, are you a new member of the legislature?
I've been a member of the legislature since 2014. I was a municipal councillor before that as the DA's chief whip in Ekurhuleni. I've got... You know, crazy political experience.
Crazy. Just mad.
Just mad.
You got political cred, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not quite the same as street cred. It doesn't quite get me into clubs. But,
I mean, I think at this point we need to just say to like any ANC people listening, you are welcome on the show.
Yes, answer your tweets and emails.
Please answer your tweets and emails. We are not shilling for the DA. It's starting to look like we're the Mail and Guardian. What the Mail and Guardian does for the ANC, we do for the DA. But really, that's not the case. Ashor, we've called you in because you understand American politics probably better than we do. You know, I just really read WikiLeaks and Donald Trump's Twitter timeline. So that's my exposure. I try to avoid the Clinton News Network.
Well, it's probably for the best, actually.
It is probably. So let's talk about the sort of big race, the one everyone knows about, some of the controversies there.
The human race.
The one that really matters, Ramon, the American president. I don't know if you'd agree with this, two terrible candidates this year.
I agree and I disagree. It's strange. So both candidates are historically unpopular. If you look at their numbers, you know, they are, if Clinton's negative favorability is 10%, Trump's is 25%. Never before has any established democracy had to choose between two, you know, fundamental evils. But what is interesting about Hillary's numbers, and I'm a numbers guy, so this is going to get a bit boring, is that amongst her supporters, so the people who are intending to vote for her, numbers are no different to that of Ronald Reagan when he was first elected, or Clinton I, or Bush I, or Bush II, for that matter. So around 57% of people who are voting for Clinton are actually very happy to vote for her.
Mm.
So to a very large chunk of Americans, Hillary's not that bad, but... She's really, really evil to any Republican, you know, who isn't voting for. She's seen as fundamental evil. Like, you know, I think it was Ben Carson who said that she has links to Satan. and then, of course, they did a poll, and 25% of Americans agreed
that she did have links to Satan. And of course, she did, together with Barack Obama, start ISIS. Of course, she's the founder of ISIS, according to Donald.
But what Trump actually hasn't said yet is that actually they're terrible leaders of ISIS, And he would be a huge, great, wonderful leader for ISIS if he were given the chance. So, you know, he really should be put in charge of ISIS.
The greatest leader of ISIS ever.
Precisely.
Yeah, that wasn't half bad. That wasn't half bad. Okay, so look, sure, the numbers sort of say Hillary's not as hated as kind of where Ronald Reagan would have been when he got in, or any of the other recent presidents. Trump obviously seems to be a lot more of a divisive character. Yeah, it's like the obvious.
Can we just, from now on, can we just say Crooked Hillary? Because that's actually a real name. What can we call Trump?
We'll call him Grabby Trump.
Grabby Trump.
So, all right. Now I've lost my train because my train's gone. The Trump train's gone off into the distance.
Let's start with the basics of the election system in the US. It's probably the most complicated thing since like the nuclear deal tender in this country. So like, how exactly does it work? So you have these things called primaries.
Yes.
And then you got electoral colleges.
Yeah.
And then you got like state, like
it all gets
Iowa.
Very complicated and blah, blah, blah. Basically, the United States is extremely democratic. So the political parties don't actually get to choose who they put up as candidates. When you go register as a voter in the US, you go and register as a Republican, as a Democrat, as an Independent, as a Libertarian, as a Socialist, whatever you want, whichever party you want to affiliate your voter registration to. You then get information from that party saying, this is when our election is, blah, blah, blah. In the presidential primaries, literally millions of ordinary people go and vote in these primaries for the party's candidates. You're not a member of the party, you're just an affiliated registered voter to that party. And, you know, tens of millions of people go and vote in these primaries, and that sorts out who the party's nominees are going to be. So the parties actually have very little say. The way they do control is obviously money, you know, pump money behind your preferred candidates, advertising, political action committees, those sorts of things. So that's where the primaries come from.
That's how you end up with Trump.
That's how you end up with Trump, yes. The fact that political parties don't get to choose their nominee, which is actually a great system. It's wonderful.
I was cut off from my own show. And how you end up with Hillary is that you use the DNC to vilify Bernie Sanders.
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that. But, you know, Hillary has a lock in minorities. And I think it's important to discuss minorities in election politics a bit later on.
Crooked Hillary.
But Crooked Hillary had a lock on minorities and that got her through the system. By quite a margin, actually. It wasn't even close between her and Bernie. Like, even discount the DNC, it wasn't even close. But yeah, so then you've got that system. Then you've got the Electoral College, which is, again, all confusing, these states, whatever. Basically, the way the system was designed was that people weren't actually meant to vote for presidents of the United States. You go and you vote for a slate of electors in your state, and these slates of electors meet at an Electoral College and pick a president. That was how it was designed. But obviously, democracy evolves, and what it's become is every state gets a number of delegates to its Electoral College delegation equal to its number of senators and congressmen. Now, the congressmen are divided up proportionally. Hmm. Basically, each state gets a number. So,
is it fair, though? Right. It seems it's like small, shitty states like Florida have a lot of say.
Well, Florida is a fairly big state, but it's not quite fair because states, very small states actually have an oversized say in the outcome of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
An oversupply of something.
Yeah, basically, if you're a vote in California, your vote is worth very little. If you're a vote in New Hampshire, which only California's got 55 delegates, all of which will go to Hillary Clinton. If you're in New Hampshire, which is a swing state, but there's only 4 delegates, you might actually tip this election one way or another in a close election. You know, your vote could actually be the one that tips it one way or the other. It's a very complicated system, and it's not very fair. And it's not proportional. And, you know, we have seen instances where people lose the popular vote and win the Electoral College. Bush II, for example.
Yes.
It does happen. But, you know, these are the quirks. It's a system. It's still the most functional democracy in the world, even though it produced Trump. I mean, Trump is still a manifestation of the will of a segment of the electorate. Like
a basket of deplorables, you might say.
Yeah, one might say, actually. But, you know, it actually is a system that's functional.
Right. I mean, that's why I hope he wins, because it will be the end of democracy as we know it. And that's a great thing. Because democracy has become the case of the lowest common denominator wins. And Trump is a great example of that.
As an elected representative, I have no comment.
All right. So we get to, fine, so they go through primaries. We know who we got out of primaries. Just you want to comment on that, on the Republican side? I mean, they had some good candidates there. Well, someone like Marco Rubio probably
This was probably the most talented. Yeah, this was the most talented Republican field in a generation. And there are a couple probably who could have beaten Hillary. I don't know if Marco Rubio could have, But I think someone like John Kasich, who is the governor of Ohio, probably could have...
so boring.
Yeah, but that boring guy would have won. there were Scott Walker, he was the governor of Wisconsin. He probably could have beaten Hillary in a straight fight. There were several. There's George Pataki, who was the governor of New York previously, many, many years ago.
And a wild card like Carly Fiorina?
Nah.
No, no way.
I think the insider-outsider, while you hear all of this, Carly Fiorina could not have trounced Hillary. I think that you needed a mainstream solid Republican who peeled off minorities or minimized minority turnout. And again, I'll get to this because it's very important to understand what's going on in the U.S.
Mm.
But yeah, I think you needed a centrist moderate type Republican, a John Kasich, a George Pataki, and so on, who are economically right, but not picking the culture war fights. And that sort of person would have won. I don't know if that was Marco Rubio, but there were several. It was a very talented field. But Trump dominated simply because in the debates, he just, bullied, and he was up against 13 men who he could bully and dominate and just say, be quiet and call low energy and et cetera.
Because he doesn't play by the rules.
No, he didn't play by the standard rules of debate. And it worked brilliantly for him in the primaries, and he completely destroyed his opponents.
Jeb Bush being the one that he really humiliated.
Yes, and Jeb Bush.
Did you see that? Sorry, did you see that clip where he says something and he says, please clap? He asked the low energy to clap.
Yeah. But poor old Jeb, I saw some stats somewhere where he spent $100 million and got 30,000 votes. It's the most expensive campaign.
Million dollars,
it's the most expensive campaign for the fewest number of votes ever cost. but nonetheless, look, the point is that he completely dominated that Republican field in debate after debate after debate. He owned them. There's no other way to describe it. And he didn't really put forward any policy positions apart from, a little bit of racism, a little bit of sexism, build a wall. Not really in depth, but he spoke to something very important, and that is the fact that there's a lot of anger amongst working class people in the U.S., especially white working class voters, who have not seen their incomes rise in 20 years. There was the dot-com boom and bust, and there was the Bush era of war and massive deficits, and the Obama era of, great money for banks, but not much for everybody else. And so key industrial areas, he was able to tap into their anger and really get them to him. And this is why, no matter what Trump says, he'll not dip below a certain percentage in the polls. It's impossible for him to dip below that percentage because he has a lock on these voters.
Okay, so these two become the candidates. Ramon's mentioned Hillary's sort of dodgy way of getting there, but you say she would have got there anyway.
Yeah,
I'm quite, in some ways, I'm grateful because I think as much as I'm not a big fan of Hillary, and I'm not a fan of Hillary at all, I think Bernie would have been
crooked Hillary,
apologies. I think Bernie would have been way worse.
Can we call him Crazy Left Bernie or Julius Bernie, because he was actually far left?
Well, we can call him Crazy Bernie. He reminds me of the guy from Back to the Future, we need to hit 88, Marty.
Why don't we just call him Caviar Socialist? He bought a third house now, I see.
Yes.
Must be great, eh? All those students paying their $10 donations, and then he goes off to buy a fucking house. It's fantastic. Brilliant trading.
Yeah,
I love
it.
Okay, so we end up with Hillary, we end up with Trump. You mentioned the whole lesser of two evils argument. I think that's still a terrible argument because you still end up with evil. We now have these two candidates, and the media, it seems to me that the media has certainly, the mainstream media has been to some extent biased. You certainly have Fox and Breitbart siding with Trump, but they're a small part of what is made up of American sort of media. They're probably about 15%. You then have sort of the major networks, MSNBC, ABC, CNN, et cetera, all sort of backing Hillary. Now, Donald's done some and said some really kind of some ridiculous things, some stupid things, some funny things. He's going to build the wall because many of the Mexicans coming over are rapists and criminals.
Bad
hombres was in the last debate is what he said. He also wants to ban all Muslims because of immigration and terrorism and whatever. He said those things. None of these things sink him, which is hilarious. So none of these things actually are enough to bring him down in the polls. In fact,
makes him more popular.
He's surging in the polls coming to the second debate. I think it was the second debate.
Well, going into the first debate, and it's quite interesting. So he had a bumper convention.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the Democrats had their convention a week after. There are a couple of set pieces in the election campaign. There's the party conventions where the nominees, you know, basically coronated, and they drown out the airwaves for a week, and it's completely theirs.
And that's all you see.
Yeah, that's all you see. And if you're living in the U.S. in terms of the media market, then the other set pieces are the debates, and that's about it. Those are the ways you reach a massive audience. Aren't people engaged in politics every single day, consuming every piece of media they see?
Mm.
They just see the set pieces. Trump had a bumper convention. And I thought at the time Hillary had a rather bad convention because the Bernie people were chanting and screaming and so on. But I mean,
and burning American flags.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I thought, oh no, here's a disaster. President Trump, here we come. And in that week between the Democratic and Republican conventions, he actually did move marginally ahead of her in the projections.
Mm.
He was forecast to have a very narrow win. And then her convention happened. And where it all came together for her was her speech. She's not a great speaker. But her speech at the convention...
Well, robots never will be great speakers.
her speech at the convention really, you know, together with, as you said, media bias and so on, really propelled her to an unassailable position. Then Trump narrowed the gap. She's not good at the day-to-day campaigning either. She seems to be great at the set pieces. He narrowed the gap. Then she had a little wobbly with pneumonia and
she literally was unconscious and thrown into a black van.
Yes.
It looked like some pedophile picking up his victim.
Yeah.
Just a blind pedophile.
Yeah. Like at that stage, you know, he had narrowed the gap and the popular vote to within 1.2%.
Which is within the margin of error.
Within margin of error.
So the debate happens. She wins, by all accounts, the first debate.
She wins comfortably the first debate and moves into a sort of 5-point lead in the popular vote.
And then they released this tape. I think it was before the second.
Yeah, it was just before the weekend.
Before the second debate. I mean, they'd have, was it MSNBC or whoever had it? NBC had the tape.
Yeah.
Had the tape for since 2005. So they had the tape for 11 years. And they, of course, the weekend before the debate, by coincidence.
Yeah.
What a find.
What a find. Really. Amazing. Amazing that they can find this stuff just like that. They released this tape and we hear Trump talking about grabbing pussy, and this show's not censored. He's talking about kissing women and getting away with it because he's famous.
And Tic Tacs, don't forget the Tic Tacs, very important.
What was the comment about Tic Tacs?
He takes Tic Tac before he kisses them.
Well, that's very polite of him.
It is considerate. It is.
I mean, if you're going to assault someone, at least you know take a Tic Tac before. So this comes out, and that seems after all the stuff he says. That's the thing that kind of sinks his campaign. Does that make sense
to
you as someone who does elections?
In the context of the American election, it makes perfect sense. So to understand why that tape did as much damage as it did, you need to go back to the first debate. And the American election campaigns, traditional campaigns, not the Trump campaign, which is really a bit of a disaster internally in terms of its management and its tactics and strategy.
Yeah, they've changed campaign managers a couple of times.
But the Clinton campaign was very good at upper research. So they found this Alicia Machado woman who was the Miss Universe that Trump called Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping and, you know, Miss Overeating.
She was fat.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So she laid the groundwork for, you know, saying Trump is actually quite terrible to women. Then immediately after the debate, there were videos that her campaign team had produced. They had a full press tour for Alicia Machado prepared. This is Machiavellian politics, you know, executed brilliantly.
So they're setting it up.
They set it up. If you look at it, you know, and I'm not being conspiratorial, but from where I sit as a tactician and somebody who's written political strategy, I mean, I could not have written this better myself. So you go there. You pick up a 5-point lead in the polls, but you want to actually nail this guy and put him away. You've already got... You know that he's not doing well amongst women. And the only reason Republicans have been able to hold on in the past is because of suburban women with college degrees. And if you sink Trump amongst that grouping because you're losing white working class voters without a degree, which has been a Democratic stronghold for years, you know, it's how Obama won Ohio and Iowa, those two states, multiple times, twice. And how Bill Clinton obviously won his landslides, white working class voters. You know the only way you can do this is by picking up Republican women. What you've got to do then is just nail the guy about his treatment of women. And that's precisely what happened with that tape. And so there's a historic gender gap in this election. It's going to be 18 points or more. Women are going to vote for Clinton by 18 points more than men, which is going to be huge. It's going to be, you know, as Trump's going to say, it's destructive. It's huge. It's massive. It's crazy. But
that's precisely
tremendous. But it's precisely what I can't think of the adjectives. There's just so many.
Huge.
Huge. But nonetheless, so it makes sense that it would sink him. And it would also make her completely immune to any WikiLeaks thing because she's not interested in what Breitbart's printing, and she's not going after those voters. She's given up on those white working class voters because it doesn't matter what he says. She'll never get them because their economic anxiety is not something she can speak to. I mean, her links to Goldman Sachs and the bank speeches, she's lost them.
Okay, so we understand why he sort of gets nailed by the grabbing comment.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me a bit more why Hillary doesn't get nailed by, you know, these WikiLeaks. I mean, I've read some of these emails. Some of them are kind of what you'd expect for in-house emails. And I'm kind of like, yeah, of course they said that to each other. But some of it is like, you know, there's an email going where it goes back and forth about how Hillary is, in terms of her health, is she all right in the head? Is the literal like words that they use. And I'm going, okay, how are we not questioning emails like this? There's emails where John Podesta is writing to his team and he's saying, you know, they want to push Trump and Cruz to the top of the pile. This is during the primaries because they believe if they can get a Cruz or Trump ticket, it'll be such a far right ticket that they'll be able to beat them, essentially, through this demographic manipulation. So there is a lot of stuff in these emails. She also presided over Libya, which even take Benghazi out of it. And to some Americans, Benghazi is a big deal because she basically left Americans to die, which is not the American way. But if you take that out of it, Libya is a mess. A lot of what's happened in the Middle East, which she was presiding over as Secretary of State, has led to problems in that area, specifically ISIS. So she's not strong in those sort of areas. How is none of this sort of hurting her?
But just to carry on from that, but even her record on women is awful, right? I mean, she protected... Okay, it was her job as a lawyer, but she protected a child rapist, and then she laughed about it after the fact. She apparently bullied people who said Bill Clinton raped them or sexually assaulted them, allegedly. So she has as much baggage with women as Trump has, to some degree. But that doesn't stick to her whatsoever.
Well, I think, firstly, there is this phenomenon. You cannot blame this cheating spouse, or the spouse that's cheated on, for that sort of thing.
Mm.
And, you know, there's almost – you don't – blame the jealous wife. It just is not socially acceptable to blame the jealous wife, and that gives her some immunity. I mean, let's speak about the psychology of the situation here. It does give her some immunity on that front. If you look at her public policy positions on women, though, and, you know, going to China in 1996, women's rights are human rights, that sort of speech and so on, it gives her an effective counter to these sorts of things, which does help. It neutralizes that, and so it creates that balance. But also, she is the first female nominee of a major party. She has gotten closer than any other woman to the presidency. That is overarching, you know, over anything else.
Such a terrible argument. I have a vagina, vote for me.
It is a terrible argument, but it is the reality of the situation. And, you know, we might not like it. It might not be great. But
one more reason why democracy should die.
All right. So democracy might die, Ramon, but until the dream comes true. what happens when, you know... The elections are done, the votes are counted, and if the polls are correct, and I want to talk about polling shortly, but if the polls are correct, Hillary is the new president-elect. On the 20th of January, I think it'll be, she'll be sworn in, and the 21st of January, she's now the president of the United States. Trump is a long-gone memory, something people laugh about and go, oh, remember that guy who ran for president? Now... there's no foil for Hillary. So there's no, we're going to compare Hillary to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is worse in every possible way, even though she's bad. What then happens? The American people then realize who they've got? Do they then realize this is WikiLeaks, this is Libya,
A lot of presidents have entered office with baggage. You know, Richard Nixon probably more than most. And I think the best analogy for Clinton, I hate to say it, is Nixon.
Well, so we can only hope she's impeached.
Yes, well, you know, it's a possibility. but look, I think every president, when they take office, if you look at the numbers, gets a honeymoon period, 6 months, where they can say things, do things, and people generally accept, you know, the country comes together. It doesn't matter how stupid the president is or how terrible or corrupt the president might be. Not to say that the presidents are corrupt, but, you know, nonetheless, the point is that they get a honeymoon period. And I think during that time, she will probably maximize her political capital, probably strike a few deals with Republicans and trundle along. I think her ultimate aim is to not cause any waves until 2020, get reelected, and then try and push a policy agenda.
Do you think she'll still be alive in 2020?
I'm sure that medical science will do wonderful things for
I mean, the robotic parts apparently have a 10-year warranty.
I was just going to say, the Turing test might come to fruition before then.
Yeah, go.
I forgot my line of thought. Oh, yes, polling. We were going to talk about polling.
Yeah, go for it.
So, how far are they apart, actually? And for some reason, I listen to Ben Shapiro quite a lot. He's quite a good conservative chap. But he says, he always mentions Iowa, Florida, all these swing states. So what do you mean by swing states, firstly? And why are the polling there is so important?
Okay, so because of the system where you've got an electoral college, there are 538 electoral college votes, I think, of which you need 270 electoral college votes, i.e. delegates from these states, to win.
Right.
So there are states that will vote for a Democratic nominee if you put a monkey up. There are states that will vote for a Republican nominee if you put a Trump up. And these things happen. Okay.
Ooh, so, calling Hillary a monkey. Oof.
I know.
Grabby Trump.
The left are going to go after me now, but anyway. The point is that there are a handful of states in every election that are usually in play. Now, the Democratic Party has a much easier job in presidential elections because there are states that equal 246 electoral college votes that will vote for a Democrat no matter what. Even at their lowest ebb,
New York, California,
Oregon, Washington,
Connecticut,
Maine, although Maine is up for grabs this year, Massachusetts, you know, these solid blue states.
Yeah. Same as Texas is a red state.
Yeah. Although Texas is up for grabs.
Yeah,
we'll get there.
Well, Trump screwed that up.
Yes. But you know, the point is that this is the blue wall. 246 is where any Democratic nominee starts.
Mm.
And they've got to build up to 270. So the states that are important are the ones that are at play because there are a set number of swing voters, people who in one election will vote for the Democratic Party and another will vote for Republican, you know, really all over the place type of voters.
So actually the actual true Democratic voter that actually has to make a choice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are enough of these people in these states that the state will flip from one party to another in every election.
Right.
And we'll send, you know, a Democratic senator or a Republican congressman, those sorts of states. You know, New Hampshire is a prime example. They've got a Democratic senator, a Republican senator, because each state gets two, and this state has two congressmen. They've got one congressman who's a Democrat and a congressman who's a Republican. I mean, it's the quintessential swing state.
Right.
It voted for Bush, it voted for Kerry, it voted for Obama twice. It voted for Bush the first, it voted for Clinton. It really is, you know, a swing state. So there are a couple of these, and I'll tell you which they are in this election, and they're not traditional swing states, but some of them, Florida, always a swing state. North Carolina, which hasn't been until fairly recently, Ohio, always, you know, that's considered the bellwether. Iowa, Arizona in this election's up for grabs. Georgia, which is traditionally a red state. Texas looks like it's going to be close, which it shouldn't be at all. Like I say, a Republican monkey should be able to win Texas nonetheless. And then there's a very interesting place called Utah.
Republican monkey with a gun.
Yes, with a gun. But Utah should not be up for grabs. Mitt Romney won it by 70 points in 2012.
Right.
But because, you know, Mormons are generally fairly nice folk who don't like religious persecution, and are soft-spoken and polygamous. Did I just say that?
I'm sure they are. Soft-spoken and polygamous.
Everyone has their good sides.
I'm sure you'll edit the polygamous thing out. Anyway. Or not, whatever.
You just heard it. We didn't edit it.
Okay. Anyway. But the point is, you know, these are very nice, soft people who don't like banning Muslims and building a wall and so on. But they're socially conservative. You know, the culture war does appeal to them. So they're not ready to warm on Clinton, but they really don't like Trump. So there's the strange independent guy who used to work for the CIA who would probably, I'll put money on this, his name is Ed McMullen, and he will probably win Utah. And it's six electoral colleges, and that'll just knock Trump out of the
ballpark. Which I believe is unprecedented since the 60s.
Yeah, the last time was when the Civil Rights Act was passed, and you know the Southern Democrats rebelled and voted for George Wallace, I think.
Yeah, so for an independent to win a state, essentially.
Yeah.
So he'll take those electoral college votes away from both candidates.
Yeah.
But that'll affect Trump the worst.
Because Utah's a red state. So if this were a close election, if it were, and for a while it was looking like that, Utah would have probably been the state that sunk Trump, probably.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's not going to be close.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you ask me, you know, what's going to happen in these swing states, I think, you know, there is going to be a bit of what in political science they call realignment, an event that, you know, that really changes the fundamentals of politics. And you've got to understand the way the two parties have positioned themselves over 40 years. And the Republican Party is socially conservative, abortion, gay marriage, blah, blah, blah. But the key thing is they were the party of free trade, market economy, all of those good things
and
that we
freeing
like.
Freeing the slaves.
Freeing the slaves.
Freeing the slave things, you know.
It was before that.
It's a long time ago. You know, you can't really hold a modern party accountable to.
Well, it was the Democrats that wanted to keep the slaves.
But until the 1960s and all of the stuff realigned. Now, this, what I think is happening is we're seeing a fundamental shift. And again, when I spoke about white working class voters switching parties fundamentally, what you will see is, you know, Clinton, for all of her flaws, is actually a capitalist. And when challenged and with Bernie on a debate stage, said she's not going to take down capitalism because it created the greatest middle class the world has ever seen.
Right.
Her words to Bernie in a debate with a left-wing audience, which I think is actually quite significant. So what we will see is the populist sort of anti-trade, protect the factory workers, you know, oppose China for currency manipulation type, which really are, you know, left-wing, almost democratic ideas,
yes,
are going to find a new home in the Republican Party, along with the socially conservative type stuff. And the Democratic Party, Bernie, you know, now that he's been cast aside, will probably become what the Republican Party probably was in the 50s and 60s, which is the party of the Northeast industrialists, the wealthy industrialists, the bankers, the well-educated, and not too interested in the culture war type stuff. And I think that's what's going to happen. So you will see in this election, and this is all getting very boring and technical.
No.
But
carry on.
But you will see in this election states like Iowa, which historically, you know, is a swing state but Democratic leaning because of its working class voters, cornfields and so on. I think that will probably go to Donald Trump, even though Barack Obama won it twice. I think Iowa, which is considered the bellwether, it's the state that if John Kerry won in 2004 would have been the president, white working class voters, big industrial base, will probably go to Donald Trump. I think three other states that have been reliably Democratic, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Sure.
Well, they won't go Trump, but it'll get close.
Close.
But on the flip side, I think...
And I ask, if those three were to go Trump, because I want to get into the accuracy of polling now. If those three go Trump, does he get much closer than we think?
I think
and Texas and Arizona remain Republican states.
Then he wins. If he can win Iowa, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Arizona, and Texas, he wins the election. There just aren't enough electoral college votes left for Clinton.
If you are listening in Iowa and all those other weird states, vote for Trump, please. Vote for Trump. In democracy.
Yeah. But look, I think there's enough of a margin for Clinton in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan right now.
Yeah.
And remember, Michigan, Detroit, lots of African-American voters. She's got a bulwark there that'll keep her safe.
Yeah. Another thing I actually wanted to ask, it's slightly deviated, but the African-American voting bloc traditionally has been quite conservative, religious, slightly more homophobic than most other people. Don't say that out loud. They seem like quintessential Republicans socially.
Yes.
Why do they keep? Why over 90% of the black vote Democrat for like the past 45 years or whatever it is?
I think two things. Most people don't actually. I don't think people should vote on cultural issues in an election. You vote your economic interest, and I think most people generally do. And this is what we're seeing with Trump, actually, is these white working class voters who are Democratic. You might ask, why are they suddenly voting for Trump if they, you know, are pro-abortion and pro-choice. And let me be politically correct here.
Right, I'm pro-abortion.
And pro-choice, you know, they're not opposed to gay marriage, but people vote for economic interests. And the problem for the Republican Party amongst black voters is from the day it opposed civil rights all the way through and, you know, through making voting harder for African-Americans in southern states where they dominate, they've actually created this wedge where they can you can never reach somebody and say, but I speak to these issues and I speak to you about these issues and these issues have a home with me if you're going to keep blocking my right to vote.
Sure.
You know, you're never going to win that person over.
Yeah.
And it's those sorts of things.
And unfortunately, but all the Democrats do is patronize them and then keep them on welfare and create negative things within the community as well. So
there's a very interesting article that I read a couple of days ago that made a very strong point that, ironically, it is not liberals in the U.S. that created the black middle class. It is actually all sorts of conservative conservative policies that created the black middle class in the United States.
The liberals created, in the sense of the American term of liberal, the liberals created the poor class, and in the last 20 years have created a lot of violent societies. You know, these Black Lives Matter protests and then riots that we've seen are happening in Democratic cities. They're angry because the Democratic city they live in, with Democratic mayors, black police chiefs, etc., say that the police are purposefully targeting their communities. Well, not really. Your communities probably need good policing. That maybe the policing is not as good as it could be, but certainly you keep voting for the people who got you here to this point, or they certainly didn't help you to get to a better point.
Sure. It reminds me of another country. I can't remember. The one where they keep voting for the same party that doesn't help them out. I'm struggling to remember.
Yeah, where their leaders lead them astray.
I can't remember.
Their policing could be better as well.
It could be better as well.
And poverty just remains as a trap. Anyway.
The counterpoint to that, though, is that the Republican Party does not offer anything to African Americans either. This is the key thing, is that they don't actually... They don't address racial issues in a non-racial manner. This is it. So they pander to sometimes the worst instincts of their base.
Yeah, xenophobia.
Exactly, yeah. Precisely, and that's why they can never break through this link. You know, all the criticisms of the Democrats around black voters are absolutely correct and fair, and I've never disputed that. But you know, if I were an American, I'd vote for the Democratic Party simply because the Republicans have gone
Get
so
out.
Far.
I mean, why did we even invite him? In the recording.
The Republicans have gone so far?
They've gone so far to pander to the worst instincts of a certain base, a subset of their base, that they have forgotten that actually to win elections, it's about building coalitions of disparate groups and pursuing a policy agenda.
I mean, it's about simple principles at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, it's interesting because, you know, if you listen to some of the sort of outspoken people on the Republican side, you'll hear this very classically liberal view and not treating people as groups. So not talking about blacks or the black community or African Americans, but rather speaking of people as individuals and wanting success for them as individuals.
But even going on to that, sorry, Jonathan, but even the candidates during the Republican race, I mean, Ben Carson, you know, a black, world-renowned neurosurgeon who loves a bit too much of Jesus for my liking, but, you know, an accomplished black guy, and that failed to win him any sort of credence.
No, look, there is some systemic problems with the Republican Party, and I think Donald Trump, in a strange way, tragically, not just epitomizes that, but after Trump... The Republican Party is not going to be able to rebuild for another 10 years because the one guy who probably could have pulled the Republican Party together in a non-racial sort of policy direction was Paul Ryan. And Trump has completely wrecked Paul Ryan's career. I don't think he's going to come back as Speaker of the House after the election. No.
Oh, really?
I think Paul Ryan's completely screwed because I think he's got to deal with the Trumpian sort of.
For those
of
you
who
don't know, Paul Ryan's a less good-looking version of Ryan Gosling, who is basically an American politician and had a lot of his youth. I think he had a lot of.
Well, he was vice president.
He was the vice president. He was Mitt Romney's vice presidential nominee. He is the Speaker of the House of Representatives currently, and he's one of the leading sort of conservative. And I use that word in inverted commas because libertarian, really. Thinkers who has a defined policy agenda to reform welfare, to reform healthcare, to provide all of these things from, you know, market-based principles, and probably should have been the Republican nominee and probably could have won the election because he presents a policy agenda as opposed to a culture war agenda.
Yeah. Right. Okay, can I ask you on the policy stuff? You've already said people don't really care about where someone stands on these sort of cultural issues. So abortion, as an example, why do the candidates target these as sort of major issues? It doesn't seem like they are major issues. Everyone knows that the Republicans kind of going to go, you know, if he's a very moderate Republican, he's going to go, well, you know, I'm not really 100% sure, but personally, I think that we shouldn't be doing abortion. And they all know that the Democrats going to go, if they depends on how moderate they are as well.
As long
as women
the baby's in the womb. Take it out. Abortion's fun. The day before the birth. Some of them even.
Yeah, well, so now we've got partial birth abortion and all this kind of stuff. But it just seems to me that that issue, there are other issues as well, which are the big issues in American elections. And they don't, it doesn't translate, it would seem, with the voters, with a small subset, absolutely. Why do they chase after those as the issues?
Okay, so in the course of an election, you do two things. You shore up your base, so that you get turnout amongst your core voters, people who believe in the same things you believe in, I use believe in inverted commas as well, or purport to believe in. And then you need to win over the swing voters. Swing voters are usually voting economic interests. Your core voters will be extremely ideological, will be the guys who go and protest outside an abortion clinic, or will be the guys who protest next to the protesters outside the abortion clinic. And so you're shoring up your base with the culture issues. You're getting the feminists who are pro-choice out to vote for Clinton, for example, or Obama, by picking
and
these
the religious guys.
And the religious, and it's more important in a strange way for the Republican nominees than for the Democratic nominees, because they've got to get out the religious right. And Trump has, until fairly recently, had a very hard time convincing the religious right of his bona fides. So, you know, you've got to pick these wars. So you've got to pick these fights just to show the core voters, I'm with you. And then you go to the issues that actually the swing voters are focusing on.
Doesn't seem like we've gotten there, though. We've heard about, if you look at the debate issues.
I mean, do you know any Hillary Clinton policies? I don't.
No, well, none of them have been particularly strong on policies. I think they have policies, and I think Hillary is definitely stronger in terms of having actual written out policies. I wonder if Trump might not have made a fool of himself on some of his issues if he had been a bit more specific. So banning all Muslims, as an example, if you bring that back a little bit and do what he did 2 weeks later on that comment when he pulled back and he said he wouldn't ban all Muslims, but he wants to have a better vetting process for migrants, refugees, and whoever's coming into the country. I think that probably would have been a good, strong position, certainly for Republicans, and something that centrists might have got behind in terms of vetting. But once he already said the most extreme thing he could say, it's hard to pull back from that. Okay, before we get on to – well, let me give you a last question last. Let's get onto the Senate and the Congress, because I know Ramon is looking like he wants to shoot himself, but everyone knows about the presidential candidates. A lot of what we've discussed, they may have some insight into. Really what's going to matter is whether you get Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton as the president. It's because of the way of the American structure of the system, it's difficult for a president to do stuff without a willing Senate and Congress.
Yeah. Basically, the U.S. works in a system of divided government. So the president is meant to administer the country, enforce the laws of the land, spend the budget that Congress authorizes, that sort of thing. The decisions, the legislative decisions are made, you know, how much can you spend, what can you spend it on? That's done by the Senate and Congress in conjunction, what bills are passed and which ones you have to enforce. Now, there's been paralysis in the U.S. for the last 6 years because the Republican Party has taken a view that, you know, we must be obstructionists and block everything that comes through, that comes our way. Not criticizing them for it. I mean, you know, I sit in opposition benches and vote no a lot. So I can almost relate.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, a point where obstructionism gets to extremes, which has happened now. I mean, they're not even confirming a Supreme Court nominee, which is unprecedented in the history of American politics. So the battle for the Senate is going to determine a lot of things, because you've got to get your cabinet through there. It's got to be approved by the Senate.
Yeah, currently a Republican Senate.
It's currently a Republican Senate, yes. They wanted – Obama's was quite fortunate. He had a Democratic Senate for 6 years of his presidency. It's only the last two that he had a Republican Senate. Now, you know, the battle for control also rests in these swing states. And there are a couple of states. New Hampshire, where there's a Republican incumbent, probably going to be knocked off by the Democrat. Pennsylvania, there's also a Republican incumbent knocked off by the Democrat. In Indiana, Mike Pence's home state, Donald Trump's running mate, the Republicans can be knocked off by the Democrat.
So Pence is going to lose his spot, so you better hope Donald wins.
Yeah, exactly. Pence is a shame. He's playing a losing game. I don't know what got into him. But nonetheless, that's as an aside.
Would he have won if he hadn't?
In a strange way, Mike Pence had such a good debate as the VP guy. I thought, you know, I could actually vote for this guy when I was watching that debate. I thought, yeah, this guy's okay. He's also not a friend of Vladimir Putin, which is
helpful.
It does help that he's not really friendly with Russia. But the point is that there are a couple of states that will determine control for the Senate. And as things stand, the Democrats will probably win control of the Senate again, and that will give Hillary Clinton some leeway within her first 2 years. I think they'll lose it in 2 years' time when there's the next wave of congressional elections, but she will win the Senate, or the Democrats will win the Senate, and she'll push through her cabinet and her nominees for the judicial system and so on.
So assuming she wins, I mean, the big fear of a Hillary victory is that A, her record is not fantastic, but B, there's this thing about judicial appointments on the Supreme Court. So now Justice Scalia passed away last year or this year, and there might be one or two more during the course of her term. Why is the Supreme Court so important?
It's important to those base voters, as I spoke about, the extreme lefties in California who want the socialist revolution, or the extreme right wingers in Oklahoma who want to stone anybody who
isn't. Isn't it therefore important to everyone then? Because the thing is if you stack it for the lefties or you stack it for the right, you end up with a big problem.
Well, I wanted to get to the mechanisms, so to speak. So if she's free to elect whoever she wishes to the Supreme Court, because it's a very traditionally, the court's always been very tight. It's always like 6-5 decision, or whatever the case might be.
Yes.
So why is it perhaps a problem for the Republicans or conservatives if she's able to elect 2 or 3 justices?
Well, it's been 6-5 in the Republicans' favor since 1991. When William Rehnquist, I think, stepped down. Since 1991, it's been in the Republican favor. It's, you know, been a Republican-leaning court, a right-wing-leaning court. Not that I think court should ever be political, but unfortunately it is in the U.S. And so there's now currently a situation where it's 4-4. You've got 4 Democratic appointees, 4 Republican appointees, 4 hard right guys, 4 fairly left-leaning guys. And whoever gets this appointment is going to determine the balance of power in the court. If it's somebody far left, if she appoints, I don't know, Barack Obama to the Supreme Court, I mean, I'm being facetious here, but...
Well, she could, but they actually say he's going to the United Nations to be the head of the UN.
Secretary General.
God help us all.
but nonetheless, you know, she could appoint Barack Obama, and then every decision made, you know, it's going to be predictably done... Right. Not necessarily based on what the law says or what a very liberal interpretation of law might be. Mm. You know, the flip side is if you get another Scalia type, you're going to get an extremely conservative type who might overturn, you know, the constitutional ruling Roe versus Wade that legalized abortion, for example.
Mm. Yes.
So what you ideally want is somebody who's soft and a centrist and will, you know, actually look at law and consider legal precedent and come to a decision. And a strange way Barack Obama to do that when he nominated Merrick Garland, because this guy, you know, you look at his record, so pro-guns and some things, but he sticks to the law. Very uncontroversial. The Republicans even said Obama will never nominate this guy because he's too moderate. You know, and then, of course, Barack Obama went and nominated him. So the fear is now, of course, that if Hillary is given the chance, she'll put in somebody to appease her base, which is, of course, far left.
And can the court actually strike down constitutional amendments and things like that? So the Second Amendment, gun laws, things like that.
No, it's written they can't. But what they can do, so
they can interpret it in a way.
So they can say the Second Amendment protects your right to bear arms, but it doesn't say you can have an automatic rifle that shoots 30 bullets per minute.
Or it doesn't mean you should have bullets at $1. It could be $1,000 per bullet.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Like that.
Yeah, that's something like that. I mean,
so they can make it very difficult to have guns, in effect.
Yeah, I mean,
while still approving.
They can protect the right in theory. Let's put it that way.
Okay, right.
Yes.
That's what Chicago does, right?
Yeah. I mean,
the greatest mass killing every weekend of black men and Black Lives Matter is nowhere to be found. But they also got one of the strictest gun laws in the U.S. in terms of background checks and things like that and competency tests. Look, very much like
gun laws don't really, you know, they don't really help you with illegal guns, which is where the problem comes in. And until governments begin to solve that problem,
shock horror.
I'm trying to understand. You would vote for Hillary. You pro gun.
I didn't say I'm pro guns, but
you know the problem.
Stop picking on the guests. He's here to comment.
I have this problem where everybody on the right seems to think I'm a crazy lefty, and everybody on the left seems to think I'm a crazy right winger.
Means you're in the middle.
Please
perfect.
Don't label me as right.
I'm not labeling you as anything. I'm just saying that people on the right.
I know. I'm called crazy. All sorts of things from communist to fascist.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Yeah. I'm a good, gentle liberal.
Okay. So Hillary's likely to win the Senate, or the Dems are likely to win the Senate. Congress,
interesting. So Congress has been gerrymandered quite badly.
Just explain gerrymandering for those who aren't aware.
So in South Africa, we've got this proportional system where you go and vote and the number of seats a party gets is directly proportional to the number of votes they got. So if the DA gets 50% of the seats, we get 50% of the vote, we get 50% of the seats. That's just the way it is. In the US, every state draws up its little districts. Based on the census, they'll be told, okay, Pennsylvania, you've got 20 seats, draw it up however you want. And what happens is you'll find that the map drawers, depending on who's in charge of the state government, will draw this tiny little district that encompasses every minority community and will just stretch the highway and only the highway all the way up to the next minority community and then across the highway, these little bulbs. And you have things that look like strange clouds and so on as districts. That's not rational. So they draw up these districts to suit the party
in power. To guarantee getting the seats.
To guarantee getting the seats. So, you know, if you look at the 2012 presidential election, the Democrats got 1.6 million more votes than the Republicans on the congressional ballot. But, yes. You know, the Republicans won a resounding majority in Congress. It's just the way it is. Gerrymandering isn't fun, but it happens all over the place. In South Africa, we had a first-past-the-post system in the 40s, and the National Party gerrymandered. That's actually how they beat the United Party out of,
right.
out of office. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, just based on constituency.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the Republican Party, because of gerrymandering, is likely to hold the most number of seats, even though they won't get the most number of votes.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Hillary has a complete blowout. Now, I'm thinking she's winning by 7%, which is, by American standards, a landslide, but it's not enough to take control of Congress. If she gets to 10% and she wins places like Arizona and maybe even Texas, if she gets within 2 points in Texas and, you know, Utah goes to McMullen and all of these scenarios that point to a complete Donald Trump blowout, and she has a comfortable victory in what are otherwise swing states like Florida and North Carolina, then they're going to win control of the Congress. It really depends on the margin. If she gets over 10% of the popular vote in her margin of victory, then
assuming partisan voting,
yeah.
If you have a Congress, a Senate, and a president who's Democrat,
then you end up with...
You do whatever you like.
Yeah, you end up with Obamacare.
Yeah, which is a disaster.
It hasn't worked out. Like I'm all in favor
of socialism fails again.
Shock horror.
It's not done properly,
it's
obviously.
It's more expensive and you don't keep your doctor, you would have thought.
Yeah. I was all in favor of the healthcare law, but unintended consequences law is a very serious thing. You've got to make sure when you design law, what do you want to achieve and is this going to achieve? And clearly there was a disjuncture. There are too many special interests, like I want that and I want that, and it just became a mess.
Well, didn't he just collude with the medical aid?
Yeah, well, which is why they're now hiking their prices.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of just deregulating the markets, you just created more regulations to increase their market share.
Well healthcare is a bit more complicated than that, but that's a debate for another day.
Yeah, let's not get into it. We've only got a few minutes left. I want to just quickly ask you, do polling, you do elections. We've had, I know a lot of the sort of guys on the right, Donald included, Grabby Donald says that everything's rigged. It's all rigged against him, and the polls are rigged. I don't think the polls are necessarily rigged, but obviously, and we've discussed it on the show, it's the way you do the polling. So if you choose to poll more Democrats, for example, you'll get a more Democrat-leaning poll.
Yeah.
CNN did it after, I think, the second debate.
Yeah.
They polled an audience where it was like 80% Democrat and then showed that Trump lost the debate by like 26% to like 74 or something. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a possibility that the polling could be off in the sense that a lot of people either aren't reporting correctly, so they're lying about that they're going to vote for Trump, or where they're not getting hold of these voters because telephone polling, as an example, isn't as reliable as it used to be? We've seen some examples of this. Brexit was one example. Mm-hmm. The South African polls were another example. So we knew the ANC was going to lose ground in these last elections, but they seem to have lost more than was expected. To everyone, not only to the EFF, but to the DA as well. Is there a possibility that the polls are wrong and we end up having President Trump?
Well, polls are never an exact science, but there's been a remarkable consistency with American polling since the 70s in predicting the outcome.
Yeah.
And even with the problems you mentioned, unlike the UK, where polls generally get it wrong in the UK, let's not forget, the polls did not see a conservative majority government in the UK either. The polls, the polls did at one stage said there was a possibility of Nick Clegg becoming prime minister in 2010. UK polling is notoriously bad. So I think Brexit is probably not a good analogy to this. There are, you know, when you look at polls, it's never look at an individual one. So the CNN one you mentioned, complete bias. But if you look at an aggregate of polls, there's always an outlier that's too Democratic or too Republican.
Yeah.
The aggregate of polling usually is a good way to look at it because it's an easier way to unbias your samples. There's one poll in the U.S., for example, that's consistently had Trump in the lead until about a week ago. It's the University of Southern California, L.A. Times poll. And that's because of the way they constructed their sample. And they have two young black Illinois guys who are 19 or 20 or something who are voting Trump. And that skews the entire sample that says half of black Americans under the age of 35 are going to vote for Donald Trump. You know, I mean, this is...
Which is obviously not true,
but this has skewed their entire poll and produced a massive Trump-leaning poll. Hillary's now moving to the lead in that poll. So that goes to show what's going on. But a lot of what I've seen in these polls, and I look at the source data as well, is it's very hard to find the shy Trump effect, I think, which is what you're trying to get at.
Right.
You know, the people who are... If anything, there does seem to be a mild, shy Hillary effect. amongst, especially amongst white men. So we might see her winning by a fairly bigger margin than the polls say right now, which is why I say 7% when the polls say around 6.
Yeah.
I don't think that these polls are actually going to be way off the mark. I think that Trump has a very low probability of winning, and his only path to victory is, as I said, if he can, he'll probably get Ohio and Iowa.
Yeah.
I'm convinced. The polls say Clinton's going to win those. I disagree. But if he can peel off Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, then he wins. And maybe there's a problem, but yeah, no chance of Trump, I think, other than
So basically, unless Hillary dies today, she's going to
Then we get to Tim Kaine, Kaine, which is even... I don't know if that's better or worse.
It's just boring.
Well, that's it. So if you're listening to this live, if you're listening to this on the 8th of November, which will be its release date, the prediction as you heard it...
Crooked Hillary
Yay. Will be the president of the United States for 4 years, after which, if she hasn't been impeached or finally charged by the FBI for keeping an email server in her bathroom.
Or dying.
Or if she isn't dead, she will be the American president for 4 more years. But more of what Obama did, really. With a vagina, of course, because that's what's important.
Absolutely.
Right, Ashore, thank you for coming in.
Yes, thanks, Ashore. I mean, I don't know how you remember these things, Jesus. I don't know what you spoke about half the time. Something about colleges.
Right, so we'll have you back for more election on the South African end of things.
Awesome.
Yeah. You guys can find Ashore on Twitter at Ashore Sarupen, Sarupen. Anywhere else you want to be found? Anything else you write or do?
Nah, just Twitter. If you want to look at provocative things I tweet about.
Awesome. Awesome. Go follow him.
Yeah, they're used to it. They follow me.
Yeah. Ramon, thank you. Anything else?
No. End democracy now. Vote Trump, please.
All right. We're cutting him off. The anarchist is done for the day. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Renegade_Report and Renegade Report on Facebook. Give us a like. If you're listening to this on iTunes, please leave us a review and also tell us what you think.
A note, we are the most reviewed show in South Africa. We've got 31 reviews.
We're going to run out of music. Get off the mic. Right, and we're done for the day. Thanks for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And I don't know, God bless America. CliffCentral.com.